I am Avery, and I'm not gonna do a bit anymore. This is Avery not doing a bit at the beginning of the show.
And I'm Chris.
And I'm Jim, and this is Topic Lords, the only place on the internet where you can hear topics discussed. Avery, would you like to introduce yourself, or do you have anything to plug?
I am Avery. I make music. You can listen to some of my music on Bandcamp. Every time I plug...
An angel gets its wings.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. So, you know, you want more flying angels out there. Or I'm looking for a job. Can program a computer. Come find me.
Would you accept music as... rather, would you accept the job as a bard playing music?
Yeah. Oh, I totally would. Yeah. I actually, you know, I've often felt that I write really good songs when on commission, when it's like something that I don't like. I once wrote all the music for a TV show that got picked up and then never produced. So you will never hear any of that music. Yeah. but I did it all, like, it was some of my most productive time. And it was like, I always just thought I would be good at like a songwriter working in the Brill Building or something, you know, where you've got like your shirt sleeves are rolled up and you're smoking a cigarette and then like
just an 8-hour work day.
Yeah, some guys at a piano.
Gorgeous art.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, totally. Commission me for songs.
Next time I have the opportunity to pay somebody to make music, I should think of you.
Yeah, you should. Although I don't know that I can do... I'm about to shoot myself in the foot. I assume you would mostly want video game music.
Well, here's the thing. Like let's say I do it like a story game, and then at the end of the game, I want to put like a Run DMC style rap that recaps the plot of the story.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, as the credits are rolling. Yes, either rap or like an 80s power ballad about.
Oh, I already did that one.
Transformers, the movie style power ballad.
Yeah, I already did that joke. Unfortunately.
Oh, all right. Run DMC rap. It is.
But I could totally see like a singer songwritery folky type thing happening in one of my games.
It's pretty much my wheelhouse.
That'd be awesome. Make it so. Jim's long-term homework.
First, you have to have money to pay someone.
First, I need to quit my existing job and then get funding for a game enough to, like, having a game with a budget is not something I see in my immediate future. And Chris, would you like to introduce yourself, or do you have anything to plug?
Sure. My name's Chris. I sometimes go by Chal because there are many Chrises in the world. I like making games. I am going to stop having a job in like 3 days. 5 days on purpose. Okay. Fortunately. And I would like to plug mountains. They are just so awesome. They look nice. There's so many fun things you can do on them. Yeah. Big plug for mountains.
So much more selfless than my two plugs.
It's okay. The mountains don't give a shit.
I don't have anything to plug.
Have you noticed how hard it is to photograph mountains like in a way that captures their size?
So, okay. There used to be this app that you could use on like an Android phone called Cardboard Camera, which is just a panorama. But you could take the panorama and then put your phone in the Google Cardboard, which was the like really bad rudimentary VR headset. It would like process your panorama so that it was stereoscopic 3D. And then you could actually get a sense for like what the place looked like that you panoramaed. I thought that was so cool. And I was like, surely they will make a better version of this that works on modern VR stuff, but they didn't, which is too bad. I thought it was really cool.
Well, I would want it to work on my phone anyway, though. Like, I don't carry around a VR helmet to take photos of a mountain.
Yeah, you didn't need it to take the photo. You just needed your phone to take the photo. But
All right.
It's kind of a bummer to look at. But I think it captured the scale of landscapes. And yeah, it was cool. I remember I took one on top of like a little volcano in Lassen, California. If you've ever been up there, it came out really good because there's like snowy mountains on one side and lava fields on the other side. And it's just like super cool.
Yeah. But then like you could presumably just tweak a setting and like make it look even bigger by like putting the cameras closer together. The ones that are rendering the scene.
Mm-hmm. Or if you wanted it to look even bigger, you could Photoshop in tiny little houses.
Yeah,
that's true. Or small mountains.
Or smaller mountains for scale.
With a sign on them saying weak ass mountains. Yeah, there you go. That's how you make anything look smaller.
Yep.
Where are your favorite mountains?
Well, my partner and I are like starting a big world travel trip soon, but currently we're on a US travel trip. So we are currently in a town in Colorado called Dillon, which is like in the Rockies. So we're like at 9,000-ish feet up here. So it's like snowing all the time. There's snow-covered mountains all around us. And is pretty amazing.
I like towns that are just named after regular old guys.
Yeah.
Dillon.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Stephen.
It's right next to a town called Frisco, not Texas. So that's.
Oh, I know where you are then. Oh, gosh. Really? Okay. Yeah, I have a very quick. May I tell a quick story?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what this show is all about. So.
Yeah. Okay. So I was in. Is Aspen's like right there, right? I
think it's nearby. Yeah.
I worked for a company that was mostly people who ski. And so we went on this big ski vacation and I don't as a company and I don't ski. And so I spent all of my time hanging out in a coffee shop and lots of people talked to me because I wore my warmest piece of clothing, which is a floor length mink coat. And so I looked
nice.
I looked either like a 1970s pimp or just a crazy person. And I was just hanging out, working on my computer in this coffee shop. And I struck up a kind of friendship with one of the baristas at this coffee shop. And I was talking to her and I was telling her I used to own a coffee shop. So I was telling her about like my history in coffee and she was like, you should come work for us. And I was like, I've never referred to San Francisco. I was living in San Francisco at the time. I have never in my life, I'm a native San Franciscan. I've never referred to San Francisco as Frisco before, but for some reason I said, I live in Frisco. And she's like, oh, then you could just drive in. And I looked at her like, I looked at her like, what? And then I just repeated, I live in Frisco. And then she kind of got a look and she was like, okay, sorry. And then as we were leaving, we were like driving back through the mountains and we drove by the town of Frisco. And I immediately was like, oh, I was the asshole.
That's funny.
That's not 1,000 miles away. That's like 1,000 feet away. Whoops. Yeah. Dang, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, it was, and I've never since referred to San. I don't know what came over me that I referred to it as Frisco.
It's like a rare but not unheard of nickname. There's probably a tier list somewhere of like San Francisco's rare nicknames. That's not a topic though.
Nicknames that the residents hate the most.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes. The city.
Yeah.
Town.
I wonder how many cities, how many of the like major cities get called the city? I would imagine many of them.
Like the word town. People use the word town to refer to like when you don't live in town. You use the word town to refer to the nearest town. Uh-huh. Oh, you need to go to town for that.
Yeah.
And I think the city, it would be similar. Like if there's just one city nearby, you say the city.
But like if you live near like Dallas, Texas, would you say like, oh, we're going to the city? Or it's like, no.
I wouldn't say that because I'm not anywhere near Dallas, Texas. Yeah. If I referred to the city, I would mean San Francisco.
No, I mean, if you did live near Dallas, do people near Dallas refer to it as the city?
Yeah, I mean, Dallas listeners, write in. Mm-hmm.
The fifth Dallas listener to write in with the correct answer will win a free Topic Lords t-shirt. I think.
Okay, hang on.
What?
Make it so.
I mean, I do have a Sharpie.
Yes. Oh, great. Yeah, I think that's, I support this. Just one of your old t-shirts, one of your son's old t-shirts.
Yep. Oh yeah, we didn't say it's going to be toddler sized.
Yeah, I didn't say it has to fit to win a Topic Lords t-shirt.
That's true. It's a collector's item one way or another. So yeah. Do your worst, Jim.
Yeah, put a number on it.
Also, you have to come to my house to get it.
I grew up in the Bay Area, and in every city in the Bay Area, people, like, when people say the city, they mean San Francisco. And it's not even, like, the largest. It's the most famous city in the Bay Area, but it is not the largest.
Right. It just looms the largest in our hearts.
Yeah. Well, Oakland, if you're going to town, you're going to Oakland because Oakland is the town.
Oh, right. Sure.
Sure.
Have we started on any topics yet?
Nope.
No, we've been talking about mountains, maybe.
Yeah.
We should probably start on some topics.
Yeah. All of my topics are mountain themed. So it's all part of the same deal.
It segues into our first topic. Actually, no, it doesn't. This is the wrong kind of skiing. Chris, your topic is cross-country skiing.
Sure. Yeah.
So when you're off the mountain,
my partner and I snowboard kind of a lot. We've been doing it a lot here. Did a lot last year, but neither of us had ever gone cross country skiing before. until last Saturday. And we went and we had a great time. And it was like, it was a big contrast with like snowboarding and skiing and stuff has a very kind of like adrenaline junkie atmosphere, like very like cool, like everybody's cool and stuff. But cross country skiing is like the most mellow, like people were just like sitting and talking in the lodge that looks really nice, drinking their fancy tea and stuff, and like kind of just strolling around the trails. But yeah, it's similar to hiking. Because it's like outside in like a beautiful place with these groomed snow trails around. It's quicker than hiking. So like the same amount of effort gets you farther. You can also slide down a hill, which is really fun. It's just super beautiful. And the skis are super light. The boots are way more comfortable than regular ski boots. And the place that we went, they groom the trails and then they cut like ski tracks into the trail. So you just like put your skis in the track and you just walk and you just get where you're going. You don't have to steer or anything.
Wow.
Highly recommend if you've never tried it. It's really chill and really fun.
Have you tried cross-country snowboarding?
Well, I would consider cross-country snowboarding to be where you snowboard and then it's flat and you have to get across a long flat part where you're just like carrying your snowboard and walking and watching all the skiers with their ski poles just easily pushing themselves across.
Well, yeah, you have to kick with one foot. You take one foot off the snowboard.
Yeah,
one of those long poles gondola poles.
Yeah.
What do you even call that? But yeah, that would be the way. Just snowboarding, carry a 15-foot pole. That would make it a lot easier on the flat parts. Maybe not everywhere else.
Cross country skiing is the only kind of skiing I have ever done, and it was when I was a young child, and I was on a like vacation with some family friends. And we rented cross country skis and we rented boots that were slightly too big for me.
Oh, no.
I kept like popping out of the boots. And because I was wearing big, thick wool socks, the wool socks would stay in the boots. And so I would just like land face first in the snow and also be barefoot. And it was like, it was a miserable experience.
Yeah, that sounds pretty awful.
Yeah, I understand that that's probably not what most cross-country skiing is like.
I think the well-fitted boots is definitely a pretty crucial detail. Because even if they don't fit, even if they fit slightly not that well, you get blisters right away. I should asterisk my recommendation of cross-country skiing with, like, if you are the type of person who likes to hike, I think you probably would also like to cross-country ski.
If you like the snow.
Winter is just really pretty. Like, I grew up in Los Angeles. We've been here for like 3 weeks. This is the most winter I've experienced in my entire life by a factor of like 20. So it's pretty awesome.
I'm kind of surprised by that, hearing that you seem to ski and snowboard a lot.
It's mostly because like my partner got me into it, but also like Tahoe is not that far away from the Bay Area. It's like 4 hours driving. So it is doable.
I remember all of my winter experiences were as a child. When I was a kid, it snowed in the Santa Cruz Mountains and my dad got really excited and drove me out to the Santa Cruz Mountains. And by the time we got there, most of the snow, like the snow had stopped falling and most of it had like frozen into just sort of dirty ice. And we made like a tiny little snowman. And then I took a piece of ice, like a piece of snow home, and like I put it in a cup. And I put it in my freezer, and every few months I would just like take it out and look at this like dirty gray ice with sticks in it and be like, snow, this is snow. Okay.
Yeah. I know. I mean, that is a time honored tradition. Like, you save snow is something that you miss and then it comes back. It's something that like you have for a while and then you don't have it. It's like one of the early lessons in mortality, basically.
Yeah. You make friends with a snowman and then it dies.
Right. And so the idea of preserving a snowball in the freezer, like, I think that's a time-honored childhood tradition, except your version of it is very sad.
It sounds kind of cool too, though. Like, oh yeah, this is my, I got a piece.
This is the best I can do.
Jim, did you spend some childhood time in winter?
Yeah. I've lived all around, but before I was in San Diego, I was... Actually, no, I can't remember where I was immediately before we moved to San Diego. I spent some time in the Northeast. I was in New York and in Princeton, New Jersey, where it was definitely snow country. And and so I remember playing in the snow as a kid and as an early teenager. I remember not bothering to put my shoes on when I took the garbage out. when it was snowy out.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no.
Because I was just lazy. And I have a distinct feeling that, like, a distinct memory of, by the time I got back into the house, it felt like I was wearing shoes because Ooh. The soles of my feet were numb.
Yikes.
I was in Montana, in a place called Whitefish, Montana, with my band. We were at a recording studio and we played in a bar in town. And I wanted to impress the guy who owned the recording studio. So I jumped from the stage into the audience. And I think that I broke my toe then, but at some point I broke my toe on this trip. And because I didn't have proper cold wear, my feet were numb for the entire week that we were there. And when I got home to the Bay Area and could finally feel my feet again, my big toe turned black.
Oh, yikes. And wait, do you still have that toe?
Yeah, I got better. Yeah, you want to see it? It got better. I
trust you.
I think I felt pain in my feet, but didn't. I thought it was just excess cold pain because my feet were mostly numb the whole time.
Yeah, that's fine. Do you have a regimen for how to recover from frostbite that you can recommend to folks?
Here's no,
what worked for me.
Definitely don't immediately soak something in warm water. That's a bad idea. Which is what
you need incrementally, starting from cold, tap cold or something, and incrementally warmer water or something.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think so. Cause I think it's bad for your system. I was in my 20s actually, but I was 27. I wasn't super young, but we drove all the way back. It was just me and one other member of my band drove back together, Stevie, who is a regular Topic Lord. And oh, cool. I dropped him off in San Francisco. And then I drove to my girlfriend at the time's house in Santa Cruz. And I had just basically been driving for 20 hours, 25 hours or something. Cause all the way from Montana. And she was aren't you tired? I was yeah. But more importantly, I haven't been warm in 2 weeks or something. And so I went into the shower and just churned the water all the way up, stood underneath it. And then immediately realized that I just think bad. Cause it just felt painful pins and needles all over. Oh, bad.
Yikes.
Winter is no joke.
Yeah, so don't do that to recover from frostbite.
Okay, understood. If your toe turns black, don't take a hot shower to fix it.
No, probably go to the doctor. I don't know how that... I don't have a distinct memory of how long that lasted or why I didn't go to the doctor.
I mean, I would imagine it was a health insurance situation.
That's probably true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was 27. That was before Obamacare, which is still expensive. Yeah. Yep. That's probably why.
Are we ready for another topic?
I think so.
Let's do it.
Avery, your topic is putting art where advertising usually goes.
Okay. So I have a story for this, and then hopefully we can jump off of the story.
And if not, I've already heard the story and it's a good one. So that's good. That's a good enough okay, reason good. To have the topic.
Yeah. Well, I haven't even told you the details. So, okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Let's hear it.
All right. So this is another story from my 20s. I swear all kinds of stuff still happens to me, but I'm making it sound like all of the cool stuff happened to me in my 20s. Cool things like this personals ad that a friend took out for me. So I had a friend, I won't mention his name. He's one of the smartest and also one of the kind of craziest off people I know. So it's a powerful combination. And when I was in my 20s, he devoted a portion of his massive intellect to making my life more interesting, he said. And this happened in a bunch of different ways. But one of the ways was I was working at a coffee shop in San Jose, California. And this was back in the days before the internet was threatening, back when people still used to post stuff on community message boards, near the bathroom of a coffee shop, you have community message boards. And it says, and by posting, I mean physically posting something up. And so I was walking to the bathroom. And in the corner of my eye, as I'm walking, I see a printed sheet of paper that says girlfriend wanted really big at the top and then has my name and phone number at the bottom of it. And has a whole bunch of text in the middle. It was uh-oh. And so I look at it and it is a singles ad, which is, I don't even know if singles ads exist anymore. It's, which is singles ads are written in the second person. So they're written you. And so me, right? Like, and so it's the description for me, it was me. I want to be a philosopher slash rock star, kind of like a gayer Buckaroo Banzai. And then it went on to say, you must be interested in staying up late nights, talking about meaningless topics, and cleaning up after I eat slash drink slash am around anything viscous, because I'm very messy. And then it said, you are the quote unquote clingy type. This will lead, I will seem like an island of stability in your otherwise unstable life. This will lead us to grow too close, too fast. We will move in together, perhaps too early in our relationship. And from there, it goes on to be a short story written in the second person. And the details of the story are me and the girl get close together and we move in too soon, right? And then because we've moved in too soon, I start staying out later nights with my friends because like things are kind of tense at home. She then says, you will turn to drinking to fill the hole in your life. And so she turns to drinking. And because I don't drink, I start looking down on her and spending less time at home. It's true I don't drink. It's not true that I look down on people who drink. But so then this leads to a widening gulf in our relationship. And then eventually we break up. And then I discover that I have testicular cancer. And I drive my car over a cliff, and it is referred to in the story as the accident in quotes. So,
oh my god!
So it's referred to that I attempt to kill myself, I think, because of testicular cancer. And then when she hears about this, she comes to nurse me back to health. And she like shows up and we rekindles our romance. But then eventually I just die of sadness. And then it says, my last words will either be, I don't know if I should say names here. My last words will either be, and it's names of two ex-girlfriends of mine. And then it says, since neither of these are likely to be your name, this will leave you wondering like how close our relationship really was in the first place. You will turn back to drinking. And then it follows her life where she lives the rest of her life alone and drinks herself into a stupor and then eventually dies. And then at the end of the short story, it says, if interested, call. And it has my phone number and it has my name. And I called my friend immediately and was like really mad because he included names of my actual girlfriends. Well, and also my personal information, but more I was like mad that he would drag other people into this.
Right.
And when I called him, he was like, which one did you find? And I was like, what do you mean, which one did I find? And he was like, oh, I put 100 of them up in Campbell, which is where one of the two girls mentioned in the want ad lived.
Oh, no. Oh, that's bad.
Yeah. And then eventually when I calmed down, he got me to agree to go on a date with anyone who answered the ad that didn't seem crazy, which is probably why people do things like that to me. Cause after my initial being like really mad at him, I was then like, all right, fine. I'll play along with this stupid thing that you've done.
Did you go on any dates?
I got one call from someone who didn't seem crazy, but it was this again, in the days of payphones, we talked for a while on the payphone. And it took her a while to realize that I was a real person. Because what I think was going on was that she was at a bar with her friends and one of them had found one of the ads and they were like daring each other to call the number.
Right.
And we talked for a while. And as we were like working to set up an actual date, the like, you know, you need to deposit 25 more cents voice came on and then I lost the call. And I think that's probably the one that got away.
Oh,
I don't think so. that's crazy. And somebody called somebody.
It's amazing that someone.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Like they either called to meet you or they called for like, they're like, this can't be the end. I need the 10th section of the story. I've collected the other nine.
What happens after all the characters in the story are gone?
I need to know where the ARG or the Avery ARG, which I guess is an AARG, happens in real life. Where's the culmination?
AARG. I also think like, now that I haven't thought about this before, but she probably thought that I wrote the ad, right? Like, so
yeah, no doubt.
You're probably like, oh, this person is at least a creative, interesting writer.
Right.
I told a friend about this story once and he went on to manage a coffee shop in New York and he wrote a want ad that was for a barista that was patterned after this ad. And it got mentioned in the New York Times.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Was it more or less depressing?
I think it was less depressing because they're trying to attract someone. The secret point of this was like to tarnish my name, I think. Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's two examples of advertising that are secretly more art than advertising. Because that's mm-hmm. My friends want ad too. Although I never read that one. I just know that somebody at the New York Times saw it somewhere and wrote it up.
Yeah, yeah. The example that comes to mind that I've done was it was the Kickstarter for the Frog Fractions 2 pitch video, which was just a nonsense short film, basically, with a Frog Fractions theme.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Effectively, it was just like, I made this video. Do you think I would make a good video game too?
Do you know who Miranda July is?
Rings a bell, but I don't know.
She's she's an artist and an author and an actress. She's a person that does a bunch of stuff. And she, in the early days of cell phone apps, released a cell phone app. And the ad for it was like a short story. It was like a weird little short story. Such to the point that I didn't think the app actually existed. I just thought it was some kind of like excuse to make a little movie. And the app was like, you hire people to have difficult emotional conversations for you. And then you can rate your experience, like both the person that received the you can both rate the performance of the person that gave the thing. And then that person can rate person that received it. And so it would, and then like the short story is just follows a bunch of different people. And there's a guy, she lives in New York. So it takes place in Central Park. And there's this huge buff guy working out on a bench. And then he gets a beep on his phone and he looks and he stands up and he looks around and he sees this sort of teenager sitting on a park bench. And he goes and breaks up with the teenager for the teenager's girlfriend. Uh-huh. And then hugs the guy. And then it's great. I forget what that's called.
I feel like I heard a podcast about that because that story sounds really familiar.
It's really it's interesting. Yeah, it's really worth watching. Miranda July. She was in she's an actress in a few artsy indie films.
That's cool. When I think of art where advertising goes, one time I don't remember where. I think it was somewhere not super far, somewhere in the Bay. A KFC billboard that had a Colonel Sanders that was real. Like a figurine, kind of like a big figurine as part of the billboard. Uh-huh. But then the billboard was just covered in graffiti, but Colonel Sanders was completely untouched. So it kind of had the implication that he did it. It was
pretty cool. Oh, that's good. That's pretty good.
That is good. Do you think that was part of the advertisement, or do you think that people were graffitiing the billboard and then someone's no, bro, that's the Colonel. Don't deface the Colonel.
Yeah, I think the second, because the billboard didn't start with graffiti and the graffiti built up over time, but never on the Colonel. It's just
show some respect. That's
the artist touch. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a Kentucky Colonel. He's a bona fide Kentucky Colonel.
Another great advertising place that I think that I'm curious, it would be cool to see art there is there's always on the back of a Safeway grocery receipt, there's a million slots. There's local business, local sandwich shop, a couple places, and there's always a bunch of open slots. So I don't know how much those cost to get. Maybe it's a huge amount of money, but that would be a very cool place to put some art.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be cool. I like that idea.
You turn your receipt over and it's kind of a zine. So everything's kind of themed. It's what's this week's receipt look like?
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be better than the coupons that you get now. I once got a coupon for bullets on a receipt.
Is it BOGO or something?
I forget. It was, it must have been at a store that also sold bullets. I don't remember why I was there.
Maybe Walmart. They sell bullets at Walmart, right? Or at least in Texas they do. Yeah.
They sell everything at Walmart. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's a tremendously useful place to shop.
Should you be able to pick up your pharmaceuticals in the same place where you could buy your bullets?
I mean,
yeah, what if you mix them up and you start shooting pills at people?
and you hit somebody and they're like, oh, I don't feel iron deficient anymore. This is great.
My depression is clearing itself up.
I'm going to run home and tell mom.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like thinking of pharmaceuticals, it would be nice if there was like art instead of like pharmaceutical advertisements too.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice if there was art instead of any advertisements.
Yeah. So, okay. So the answer, so the topic is putting art where advertising usually goes. And the answer is yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes, please.
The answer is yes, please.
It's like when a form says gender, you say yes, please.
Yes.
There's something interesting about when you have an ad that is a straightforward advertisement, but it's done well enough to appreciate it as art. Like that's a that's one of those interesting sort of morally ambiguous. Like, okay, if you,
whether it's okay to appreciate an advertisement.
Yeah, 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 and also like secondarily, how effective is that stuff anyway? Like, there is a series of Old Spice advertisements that were like guerrilla advertisements on YouTube that I was so amazed by that I made friends watch them, and it has never once caused me to buy Old Spice.
But maybe some of your friends did.
That's true.
Did it make you appreciate the Old Spice brand more?
It did. Yes. I've now positive feelings associated with Old Spice because of these ads.
There you go.
Yeah.
Was that the ones from like several years ago that were like the guy who's like, now I'm on a horse. Now the tickets are now diamonds. Like the
not even those ones. And those ones are great. These were like, it looks like an ad for something else in YouTube, but it's so weird that you don't skip it. So the first one that I saw was an ad for spray tan parties happening in your area. And I was so taken in by this because it was like I watch a lot of bad movies and stuff, but I was like, this is amazing. Whatever is happening here is amazing. And after it gets past the button to skip beyond it, it freezes in place. And then it like splits up in like it's a curtain, I think. And then there's a guy standing there, a trim, very buff guy in like dress slacks. And he begins to chastise you for watching this spray tan thing. And it goes further than that. There's like all these weird little jokes. Like in one of them, he says, go to the buying place with your earth money and purchase. And I will still with a friend of mine be like, go to the buying place with your earth money.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And I think there were four of them. And I was just so like taken by like, after seeing the first one, I Googled them and was like, where, like how many more of these are there? But like, yeah, I guess it did. It like, I have positive feelings about Old Spice, but it's never caused me to buy Old Spice.
Yeah. But that happened to a bunch of people, I'm sure. And
yeah,
some of them almost certainly like got pushed over the edge.
Yeah.
I think I'm one of those people. Like I buy Old Spice now, and it's probably like loosely related to those.
Was it your first deodorant?
I don't know. I think I used to buy something else, but like, I don't know. At some point I was like in a grocery store and I was like, oh, I'm just going to smell the Old Spice. I know this name. And then I was like, ooh, Fiji, Old Spice Fiji. That's the one. Yeah. That one's really good.
That's your scent, huh? Fiji? It's, Old Spice Fiji?
It's just, Old Faithful. It's really
great. I had a like deodorant brand that I had used so often that it just became for me the way that I smelled. And then it got discontinued and I went through a crisis. And then like I found some at like, I might've even been on tour. I was like in the middle
last crate.
Yeah. And I bought them all and like I used them for years and I was like rationing them. I was only using deodorant like twice a week or something. and which might sound like enough, but I also go to the gym every day and sweat a lot. And so like,
yeah, you have to mix it with some other brand that so you get like half the effect.
You could just do like, yeah, like Tuesday's a left day. Wednesday's a right day. So just angle your body accordingly.
I mean, this is an opportunity for you to learn how to create deodorant yourself and like how to reverse engineer smells.
I can't reverse engineer that smell. It was made in a lab. It's probably like I got like indium and unobtainium and just like all kinds of shit that I can't get a hold of in it.
Smellium.
Oh, the last element.
Yeah. You don't want to be handling smellium.
No,
it's certainly not with your bare hands.
Yeah. Yeah, you should see what happened to the people that discovered it.
You should smell what happened.
Yeah.
Are we ready for another topic?
Yes.
Let's do it.
My topic is running Pico 8 on a Raspberry Pi. I had this Raspberry Pi like in a there's a name for this particular model, but it was one that was like built into a keyboard shaped case, and so it was like an all-in-one computer that you just plug into your TV basically. Nice. And I got this because like, oh yeah, this would be fun to do a little project on. And I knew when I got it, when I actually asked for it for Christmas, and I knew like as I asked for it, I knew like, yes, it would be fun, but I'm not going to have the time to ever do it. So it's just going to sit on a shelf. But the idea of the fun, maybe that's worth it. The idea of like, I can look at the shelf and say, oh yeah, if I ever had time, I would open that thing up and have fun with it. And then that was like 5 years ago or something like that. And I finally, this year, like a few months ago, hooked it up to the TV so that I could play Pico 8 games on the TV. I went through the whole process of setting it up and configuring, like, I had to get new drivers so that Pico 8 would run at 30 frames a second.
Nice.
Overclocking your Pico 8.
Yeah. Well, now you can work on Pico 8 on your TV too, right?
That would work better because one of the problems with it is that the screensaver kicks in based on mouse and keyboard input. And not gamepad input.
Oh no! So
you're playing games, and every like 5 minutes, you have to reach over and jiggle the mouse.
Or suddenly, it's flying toasters out of nowhere.
Right. That sounds like it's got to be a setting, right?
I couldn't find one.
Oh geez.
But I mean, it's free open source software, which means the actual setting is to just fix it yourself and recompile.
Yeah, it's not actually like Pico 8 is not a historical thing, right? Why does it have a screensaver in the first place?
Well, the Raspberry Pi is running Linux. I was running a windowing system on top of Linux that I forget what windowing system it uses. And then I was running Pico 8 in that.
Mm. So somewhere in there is your 3D pipes visualizer that you right. have to hunt
down. Yeah. So I put this topic in the bucket, you know, a few months ago, but since then, Picotron has come out, so I want to talk about that too. Do you guys know about Picotron?
Maybe only because of your own tweets, or maybe I saw that.
Okay. If you saw my tweets about it, you'll know what I'm going to say.
I don't, so.
Oh, but by the way, in case listeners are getting excited, they're not tweets, they're toots. I was tooting toots. About it.
Toots is Mastodon.
Yeah, that's the Mastodon nomenclature. It's not even the Mastodon nomenclature anymore. They changed it. It's very sad.
Oh, what, no.
Is it masts now?
I think it's just posts.
That's good.
Couldn't it be related to a mastodon? Tusks?
Tusks is good.
Tusk and retusk?
How do you spell the sound an elephant makes?
Aruga.
Toot.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of people dropped off Twitter the first time.
Yeah.
There was a headline like on like my phone. I look at headlines first thing in the morning like a horrible person.
You just have to get angry enough to motivate yourself to get out of bed.
Spring out of bed. Yeah. I want my blood pressure to be up all day long. And so I open the thing up and I look and there's a picture of a bunch of people with beards standing in a field or something. And it says something like 10,000 people joined Mastodon. And I thought it was, because I was still waking up, I thought it was about the heavy metal group Mastodon.
Right. Yeah. They're all vocalists. So there's a huge choir.
Yeah. I was like trying to make sense of it. And I thought maybe like Mastodon had done some kind of like record breaking, like the most people playing a guitar solo at once or something like that.
Right.
Is Mastodon the band that's like a fictional band, but is a real band?
No, that's Gorillaz.
No. No, there's a metal band that's like,
Oh, I know.
Death
Clock. Sorry. Okay. Not the same. Yeah. I didn't realize that until recently. I was like, oh, I just thought that was like a whole ass band, but it's like a metal.
Well, they've been doing guerrilla styles touring. Like my sister is a professional photographer and she photographs music events. And she sent me like some footage of Death Clock playing. And two things occurred to me. One, this is like old, like that show's been off the air for 10 years. And then two, it was like a bunch of people playing instruments, but they're in shadows. And then there's a screen that just like has clips from the animation of the Metalocalypse. It was very surprised that there seemed to be thousands and thousands of people there to see that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I get it. I like EDM, so like I'm all about the screen.
That's mostly what my sister does. She's a bunch of famous DJs she tours with.
Photographing EDM acts, staring at their laptops.
Yep. Backstage of an EDM, like behind the people, like behind the DJ, it's a real weird thing because the DJ will push a button and then like a bunch of lights will flash and everybody will cheer. But like, it's very different from what I am used to, which is being on stage with a bunch of other musicians and you put out a lot of energy and then people respond with a lot of energy. And it seems for a lot of DJs, it is the click of a button and then energy is produced. It's a different kind of thing.
Yeah. And if you talk too much, it's taken away.
Yeah.
Speaking of EDM, sorry, Jim, we can talk about Picotron.
No, this is fine. Go ahead.
No, I was trying to like do a fake segue.
Oh, I see.
Curious to hear more about Picotron because now I'm like thinking like, okay, so my understanding is Picotron is like a fantasy like whole desktop system.
Yeah.
And, like, can you run Pico 8 in it? Like, can you go Raspberry Pi Picotron Pico 8? How deep does it go?
I'm sure somebody's working on a fantasy console inside of Picotron. Mm-hmm. And it might run Lua. Like, I wonder if you can just call Eval. Anyway, to set the context, Pico 8, it's trying to be like a 8-bit micros, but like with all the rough edges sanded off. So just the fun parts of using an 8-bit microcomputer. And it's a really fun, cozy way to make video games. Like, it's got really well chosen constraints to not to produce the best games, but to make it the most fun to make the games. Mm-hmm. And Picotron is a project that's been happening for a while, and it's like the 16-bit version of that. And I was always kind of skeptical of this project because, like, you're not going to make a better Pico 8 by relaxing the constraints, because the constraints are what makes it so good. But after using it for a little bit, I kind of realized that, yeah, like what you said, it's not trying to be a fun, cozy way to make games. It's trying to be a fun, cozy way to use a computer.
Or can you use it to like just do your stuff?
It is a full desktop environment. All the utilities, like it has a Pico 8 like fantasy console set up in there where like there's a sprite editor, there's a map editor, there's a music editor, there's a sound editor, there's a text editor for code. But all of these things are written in Lua. They exist as Lua files in the file system of the desktop. Oh, wow. So you can go edit them, or you could write your own tracker. If you don't like the way this tracker works, you can write one. You can write a new one. Mm-hmm. Because of this, like, or download someone's like, hey, I wrote a better paint program than the one that comes with it. Just run my paint program instead. It is effectively like, and assuming it gets the user base that hopefully it does, there's going to be this whole ecology of people developing software for this platform. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've noticed, but computers suck now. Huh? Like, software developers and platform owners have figured out a more effective way to make money than making their users happy. Mm-hmm. And you, as a result, like, life is full of non-consensual updates that make your life worse. Mm-hmm. Like, software tries to advertise to you. They switch over to like a subscription model instead of a pay once for software model. Lots of little things like that. And one of the ways to escape from this is to use operating system like Linux instead. Linux is not my idea of fun. Like that shit is for people who love using computers.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm.
Oh, that's for people who are excited about how difficult it is to use their operating system.
Yeah, they want to dig in to the details of how to configure. Yeah. And that's fun for them, and great. That's good on them. But for me, like, I could totally see Picotron being my main driver for like all my hobbyist computing. Mm-hmm. Like, when I'm working, I work in Windows. When I'm doing fun computer stuff, I'm sitting at the TV in Picotron in my Raspberry Pi. And what I'm doing there is like, you know, I'm writing demos like in the 90s, like back when computers were fun. You know, I'm futzing around in the tracker making weird noises.
Uh-huh.
That shit's what life's all about, man. Making the weird noises.
How much of this is driven by nostalgia, and how much of it is driven by truly that computers are no good anymore?
Well, they're more capable than ever. It's just less fun to use, and I miss that. I miss that particular feeling. Like, part of the nostalgia of the 90s, part of what felt good about computers in the 90s was the optimism of it. Mm-hmm. Like, the feeling that, like, computers are going to make people's lives better instead of destroying journalism and politics.
Yeah. I realize that I get, like, a warm feeling of safety when I see anything that looks like the late 90s or early 2000s internet. And it occurred to me that it is from a time before the internet was seemingly unleashing, like, existential danger into the world.
If you aren't good at compartmentalizing, then Picotron might bring that feeling back for you too.
Uh-huh. I mean, also, like, it's okay if Pico 8 is like trying to capture, like, it's like capturing a nostalgic feeling of 8-bit microcomputers, and is doing that by like just specifically keeping the fun parts. It sounds like Picotron is like kind of the same thing again, like trying to capture the nostalgia of just like going and like finding cool programs to download or whatever on your old computer, but like removing the, like, just trying to keep the fun part of that. And like,
I do think that's the case. Yeah.
You could recreate BBSs and like try to log into a place and not be able to do it because two other people are logged into it. And then it'll take an hour to download your shareware game.
Picotron either has or they're working on TCP/IP support. So,
so you can,
like, I could totally see it happening. Like, this
soon you can write malware.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Just kidding.
Like, there's so Pico 8 has sandboxing features because it's so much more capable than Pico 8, but it's still, you can still just run cartridges from the BBS. The Lexalocal BBS is where you go to get your software. Like, it's a weird thing that kind of exists on the web outside of the virtual system, but you can also just load cartridges directly from it on the Picotron command line. I don't know how effective this is. I don't know about the developers' like security skills, but they at least made an attempt to do sandboxing so that it's safe to run that stuff.
Sure, yeah.
But the barrier to there being like a modern day BBS type thing that you log into and it operates like a BBS from 1990 is just the community. Is like the community has to be there to use it. And Picotron has this built-in community of Pico 8 users, people who loved Pico 8, who are now using Picotron and are interested in this sort of nostalgia. So mm-hmm. I could totally see like that being itself enough of a built-in audience for that sort of thing that it could happen.
Wow. That might at least get me interested.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I mean, you're looking for a job. Maybe you can get a job writing Pico 8 Picotron BBSs in Lua.
I was just going to ask Jim, how far has your exploration taken you so far?
I have not done a whole lot actually in the system. I built I wrote a small framework for the start of a Gordy sequel, like just enough to get it running, and that involved a bunch of like weird, like unexpectedly difficult R&D. So Pico 8 has the concept of code tabs, so that you can separate your code conceptually into like multiple named things, but it doesn't really have a file system. Like, and all the code just in practice, what's happening is that like Lua is executing all those tabs in one single block of code. But Picotron actually has a file system with separately existing files. And I put some code in one file as a library, like a vector library, and I put some code in the other file that was trying to call the vector library. And I had to figure out, none of this is documented. Like, there's a manual, but it was at the time extremely sparse, now slightly less sparse, but I bet it still doesn't document this. I had to figure out, how do I tell Picotron to say, like, I am going to refer to this other file. Please pull in the code from that file that I'm going to try to run. Lua, external to the Pico ecosystem, uses, I think, require for this, the require function.
This does sound like all of the fun of programming in the yes. in the 90s. Yep.
And Pico 8 uses pound include, like, because it is literally a preprocessor directive. Because pound include lets you pull in code from your out from your Windows file system in case you're using like a regular text editor to edit your code. But neither of those worked here. I just loaded up random cartridges from the BBS until I saw one that did this.
Wow.
And I learned how to do it from there. And I actually think that's like currently the best way to learn the API.
Wow.
That feels authentic.
Yes. I mean, so Pico 8 is extremely well documented. If I had tried to figure out how to do this in Pico 8, I would have found it on the wiki immediately. So it's going to get documented. But if you are into the process of like the true 80s experience is all you have is like whatever books are on your shelf and whatever people you know to answer your questions about this. Otherwise, you're on your fucking own solving these problems. That I guess this is much more like that.
Sounds great.
Or you could wait a year, you know, and it's past version 0.1.
You got to wait until all the generative AIs have figured out how to use it.
Oh my God. You can ask them.
How you how to use something else.
This would be the opposite of the fun, cozy way to use a computer is if Lexalawful started incorporating like AI prompting into into the Picotron desktop.
We have Clippy, but they are self-aware this time.
Oh, yeah.
It used to be an illusion, but now it's just real.
Clippy, but self-aware and hates itself.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Clippy hated itself too. I mean, you just get him out of retirement. I think he's, you know, working at a car wash or something.
I would go to that car wash.
Hello. Can I help you wash your car? Hello. Your car has been washed.
I want to hear stories about what Microsoft was like back then.
Hello. Would you like to hear stories about Bill Gates?
Welcome to Clippy's Car Wash. I can turn into a bike. I'm not going to be a whole lot of use washing your car, but thanks for coming.
Just like you aren't a whole lot of use on my computer, Clippy. Oh, wow. Yeah. I think I want to make AI Clippy and unleash it into the world. I mean, AI is already filling the world with garbage as it is. Why not?
Like, I feel like desktop pets were a thing for like a hot second, but they haven't been a thing for a long time. So maybe that's the, you know, just get the Clippy who like persistently lives on your computer and like walks up to something you're typing and looks at it and like gives you side eye like.
Yeah, make it impossible to uninstall.
I see your address. It's right there.
Do you want me to mail all your credit card information to your contacts list?
Yes, maybe later.
If you don't want me to do this, you better help me wash this fucking car. I forget if I can cuss on this show.
Yeah, we're rated E for explicit.
Okay, cool.
It's E for entertaining.
Are we ready for another topic?
Yeah.
Yes.
For this topic, we're going to be reading the poem "The Day I Fell Down the Toilet" by Steve Turner. Who would like to read this poem?
I mean, you found it.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, why don't you read it?
"The day I fell down the toilet is the day I'll never forget. One moment I was comfort, the next I was helpless and wet. My feet tipped up to the ceiling, my body collapsed in the bowl. In haste I grabbed at the handle and found myself flushed down a hole. One wave goodbye to the bathroom and I was lost in the sewer. Traveling tunnels and caverns on a raft made out of manure. Then came the washing up water with bits of spaghetti and peas, the filth from a local factory, and an undiscovered disease. Drifting along in the darkness, there was nothing to do but wait. What would I say to my mum now? What was it that made me so late? Suddenly it was all over. From the end of a pipe I shot into a part of the ocean where the rubbish was sent to rot. Glad to escape from the tunnel, to leave all pollution behind. I found a nice spot on the beach, then started to bathe and unwind. But bad things began to pursue me. They stuck to my feet and my hand. Wreckage was surfing the wave tops, and oil lay around the sand. I figured the sewer was safer, for no one said sewers were clean. I found the pipe that I came from, and I waded my way back upstream. When I got home, I was shattered. I was filthy, ragged, and wet. Rattling the bathroom door was Dad, saying, 'You off that toilet yet?'"
Wow, this is awesome. I love this.
I assume that's what happens to Mario and Luigi, right? Like, that's how they get into the Mushroom Kingdom, is they get sucked down a toilet or something.
Yeah, yeah, on a raft of manure. Yeah. Yeah,
they get diseases and stuff.
Right, and undiscovered diseases. What are these bad things? Is this like a metaphor?
I feel like it's a way of saying that he was like, finally, I'll climb out of the muck and shower off, but then he's got shit stuck to him or something.
But he goes back into the shit to escape the bad things.
Yeah, that part I didn't understand. I mean, other than he doesn't know how to get home from where he is except going back. But I didn't really understand why he went. Like, is the beach super polluted? And even if it is, it's how is it worse than the sewer?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, like, when this poem was written. Like, it uses word like rubbish and mum. So
yeah,
it's this guy's definitely British.
The last two lines of like dad is the one rattling the door. Like, who knows if this is like someone who's a child who's writing this or someone who's like thinking back to their childhood and writing this. But I think this is like the most hilarious and savage response to, like, if your dad's knocking on the door and is like, hey, did you fall in? You're like, well, since you asked.
Yes, actually.
I spent these 45 minutes on the toilet writing this poem for you, so you stop asking me.
Steve Turner, the poet, is still alive. He is 74 years old.
Oh, yeah. I found an anthology, The Day I Fell Down the Toilet and Other Poems, published in 1997.
Wow. He really does seem like a Shel Silverstein, to at least that poem.
Agreed.
You were remarking when we first turned it up that it ends. At least when I search on Google, it says people also search for Johnny Cash. and Johnny Cash was friends with Shel Silverstein, and Shel Silverstein wrote a song for Johnny Cash.
Oh.
The Boy Named Sue was written by Shel Silverstein.
That would have been my guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The one funny Johnny Cash song. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been awesome if he wrote Folsom Prison Blues, actually.
Oh, that's okay. Wow. A multi-talented dude.
Well, he spent some time in Folsom Prison.
Okay.
That's a gross poem. I like that he finds undiscovered diseases.
Yeah, he gets to name them.
Yeah.
He gets to write a white paper and get it published.
Yeah, he's going to be famous. It's a good way to be famous, too.
That's agreed, true. Yeah.
But no one's going to believe you. You'll be like, I went to the bathroom and I fell in. They'll be like, oh, yeah, okay. You were probably just on TikTok.
I found some, but that is also an extremely plausible place to find undiscovered diseases.
Yeah, I too am often covered in feces after spending time on TikTok. Yeah,
you open up TikTok and it's like you will never believe this undiscovered disease that was just found by these teenagers who fell.
Plumbers hate this man.
Plumbers hate him. Hate them. I like the like Alice in Wonderland body collapsed in the bowl.
Do you remember the scene from Trainspotting where he dives into the toilet?
No. Does he go on a trip through the looking glass?
Yeah, there is one of the characters.
Through the pooping glass.
You know, you should read your son this poem. I
bet he would be into it.
One of the last times I was on the show and the topic was an argument over what constitutes having to pee.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It'd be right up his alley.
It's going to be pretty interesting on Topic Lords episode like 2000 or whatever, when Winston's on. He's like, yeah, there's just this poem that I've never forgotten. I don't know why my dad told me it. It goes like this.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Is it verbatim?
When he's taken over Topic Lords.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. He has to take over my entire legacy. He's got to make the Gordy sequel and the Frog Fraction sequel. And he's got to make, yeah, Topic Lords episodes all the way down. I put out one of these a week, even on Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
I know it's a high standard to live up to, but.
We can't let the Storm Dancer name lose its reputation.
Yeah.
Gotta keep it strong. Like Winston the Fourth. We'll do like some kind of like immersive neural link YouTube video about like all the family podcast business and how it's been going for generations.
Yeah. Making not nearly enough to make a living on.
My old boss from a while back, his son was, when I was working there, was probably like 15 or something. He was in high school. And I asked him one time, I was like, oh, are you going to make games like your dad? And he was like, no, it seems like it sucks. I was like, ouch.
Yikes.
Yeah, now he makes like really cool mixed drinks at a bar in Oakland, but I haven't actually gone there in person yet. But
yeah,
it looks very cool on Instagram. And I'm like, dang, I would love to try some of these.
Have you seen Downpour?
I don't think so.
Downpour.games, I think, is what it is. It's an app for making Twine-style games that you play on your phone that are very like graphic design-y. So You can either take photos or like use art that you paste in and like add text to it and arrange it into a scene graph. Basically, the player will click through, and it extremely accessible and approachable. And I think that the stuff that it makes is very reminiscent of like FMV games, although it's not motion, but like I feel like you can make stuff that is like that stuff, you know, like the comic, like the campy FMV games from the early 90s, you know.
That's cool. I'm trying one now.
I could totally see making some of these with Winston once he gets a little bit more of an attention span.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could be really into that.
Yeah, and you just have to keep slipping frogs and stuff into it. Like, wouldn't this be better if it had a frog?
Yeah, uh-huh. What if we appealed to my audience instead of doing the art that you want to make?
It must be better if it was a glitch in some other game you had to discover.
Are we ready for another topic?
I think just like one more thought about this downpour thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really remember a lot from like trying to make games as a child. But there's like a really powerful moment when like something that you drew like moves or like does something.
Yeah.
So this seems like maybe an easier way to like capture that.
Yeah.
Like, and get that first moment of inspiration of like, oh, I drew that and it like moves. Look at this. That's an important aspect too. Just like, look at this. Look what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think it really could be pretty powerful for the right person. Chris, your topic is, I thought snow was one thing, but it's about a million different things.
Okay. This is kind of, I don't know, related to mountains, related to
snow,
cross country skiing. But yeah, I did not grow up around snow. I did not realize how many forms it can take. So like just some random examples. Earlier today, it was snowing. The snow was coming down in like these kind of like big hunks that where it's like a bunch of snow pieces that were like all stuck together, and then they land, and it's still like very soft, but like it's not windy. But then on days where it's windy and it's cold, like the snow can like blow around, and now it's blowing around and it looks different, and it's like whiteout conditions. You can't see anything. And then on a different day, it was like really cold, but it wasn't snowing that hard. So the snow is coming down in like actual snowflakes, which that was like the second time I've ever seen an actual snowflakes in real life. I don't know. I guess I just thought it was made up or like symbolic or something. But it's like, yeah, no, they look like that. Like, what? And they're all different. That's crazy. Like, I don't know. People use the word snowflake as like a derogatory word for people. But like, I think it's like a really great descriptor where it's like this unfathomable number of these things that are like kind of similar, but also if you look closely, they're all different. And then like snow on the ground, there's like dry, fresh powder that like is so fun to snowboard in. But then underneath that, there's snow that has like melted and frozen over many above freezing days. That's like ice rock hard on the surface, but like a little bit different underneath. And I'm just like, how? Like, I don't know. Before I was just like, oh yeah, snow, it's frozen water, but it's like a million things. And it's beautiful too, except when it's on the road. Now it's got all the like road friction stuff they put on. So now it's all gross. It's
beautiful, except when it's in Avery's freezer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that was beautiful to me.
Aw.
That sounds like pretty beautiful. Like, you got your little tiny piece of Santa Cruz snow and held on to it for a long time.
Mostly dirty ice with sticks in it. But yes, I'm under no illusion now that was snow.
Another concept that just is new to me is like frozen lakes. It's like, oh, this is normally water, but now it's this giant place you can run around on, and dogs love it.
Yeah.
There's dogs on this frozen lake. There's like six or seven different dogs that are out there every single day. And I'm like, this seems perfect for dogs because they could just run and come back and there's still more lake.
I would be scared. You're not scared to go on I guess this is from a lifelong Californian. I would be very scared to go on a frozen lake because they can crack.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Like, and especially like a dog is not going to have the judgment to know when ice might be thin.
I think the dogs are less likely to break the ice than the person, but
because they're lighter. It is something
that happens. Like people take their dogs out, and this town, I was looking it up, nobody has died from falling into the lake in a long time, but people have fallen in and gotten rescued over the last few years. But like, so I don't want to go out there today, but like we got here like 3 weeks ago and it was totally fine. They even like this particular reservoir, they like got a grooming machine and just like made some paths so you can like go cross country skiing across this vast snowy blanket that's just miles wide. There's somebody out there who had, they had a snowboard and like a kite surfing kite, like you see in the Bay Area sometimes, but not on the ocean. It was like, just like snowboarding across the top of the lake. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I thought you were going to say they had a gondola stick like we were talking about earlier.
That's what they should be doing. I think I have to try that just to prove its efficacy. I'll start with a broom or two.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what I have in this Airbnb. Maybe like there's like a vacuum Swiffer thing. I could start with that.
I don't mean to bring things back to facts, but like, don't you push yourself with poles when you're cross country skiing?
Yeah, not when you're snowboarding.
Right. Okay.
I guess if you wanted to cross country snowboard, you probably would just get some poles too.
No, just one. I just have this image in my mind of you.
You're going alternating back and forth. Yeah. So that you could you accidentally stab yourself in the foot every single time.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you gotta like keep your joints like evenly stressed.
Yeah,
it's more ergonomic to do it both ways.
All this stuff about different kinds of snow makes me think about different kinds of ice. Do you know that there's like several, like, you know what ice 5 is?
There's ice what? 9
and what? Ice 9. Wait, is ice 9 from
ice 9's the one from Cat's Cradle? Yeah,
from Cat's Cradle. Ice 5 is real. I think that it is the one where if you...
Well, and there's also a real ice 9 that does not have the properties of the ice 9 in the book.
Which is like, it turns everything else into ice 9, right?
Yeah. It's contagious.
Yeah. One of them, I think it's ice 5. That's the only one that I really understand is as you, I mean, I don't really understand it, but I can picture how you make it. Like it, when water freezes, it expands. But if you were to prevent a body of water from a volume of water from expanding when it freezes, it will affect the crystalline structure and it'll make another kind of ice. And I think that's how you make ice 5. And you have to do it under like really specific temperature and like really specific pressure controls and stuff. That's
pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is wild. It says cooling water to 253 Kelvin, which that's like close freezing, right? But at 500 megapascals, which is a lot of pressure.
Yeah. You have to put it under like a super amount of pressure.
And it says it has a complicated structure, including a bunch of stuff that I don't understand. a total of 28 molecules, which I guess just means like different shapes for the water molecules.
That's
for the waters to be in with each other or something. That's cool. It's also the name of a fast train.
Whoa, the Ice 5.
Yeah, probably because of this, though.
It does sound like a sports car or something. And there's a bunch of different ices, like Jim was saying, but I don't understand all. I know that there's like a special kind of ice for heavy water, but mind-blowing to me to realize that we have but one of many different kinds. We ever encounter but one of many different kinds of ice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really weird. Ice 4 is also a train, but what is the... Okay. Ice 4 is a metastable high-pressure phase of ice. It is formed when liquid water is compressed with an immense force.
Isn't that the same thing as Ice 5?
I think Ice 5 was also cold.
Oh. So you just compress water and it'll turn it into Ice 4?
I guess, which is crazy. They like have... Okay, on the Wikipedia article, they have descriptions of like how the crystal structure forms. But it's a description. It's like, why wouldn't you put a picture for this? I guess it's hard to put a picture for ice like under extreme pressure that probably doesn't show up in a photograph.
I want to go back, edit all of those Wikipedia pages and just put a picture of a normal ice cube like on a table or something. This is the same one for each one of them.
Okay, ice 2 is a rhombus-shaped crystal of ice with a highly ordered structure. It is formed from ice 1H by compressing it at a temperature of 198 kelvins, which is even colder, and 300 megapascals, or by decompressing ice 5. I can't. You go from ice 5 to ice 2? What?
They're really splitting hairs here.
I know. And also, what the heck is ice 1H? What about ice? Is that hexagonal ice crystal? It's the hexagonal form of ordinary ice. Okay, wow, this is cool. Like, this feels like cool sci-fi lore.
You thought ice was just one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've derailed this, but this got in my head when I was like, yeah, just like how snow is many things, just how you thought ice was only one thing. But like, if it's hexagonal, does that mean, because like the reason crystals grow the way they grow is because the molecules are all the same shape. And so they end up turning into, and there's no or very few cracks between the molecules. And so they end up forming geometric shapes. So does that mean that like you can get naturally growing, like what's the three-dimensional version of a hexagon, but like naturally growing hexagons of ice?
Well, I guess that's what a snowflake is, right? So this is saying,
yeah, it is hexagonal.
It seems like this is saying that ice 1H is like normal ice. It says virtually all ice in the biosphere, which I guess means Earth.
Yeah.
Is ice
1H. I like to call it the biosphere.
Yeah.
That's what I call my bedroom.
It makes me think of oh my God, what's his name? You know,
Pauly Shore.
Thank you. It makes me think of Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like thinking of Pauly Shore? Whose name I forgot. I can't believe it.
Isn't Pauly Shore the only actor, like lead actor from that movie who has not gone on to win an Oscar?
I think that's true. You know, but they'll probably eventually give it to him for like lifetime achievement, because usually what they do with people in that, like when he makes Biosphere 4,
right?
they'll give that an Oscar just because they realize his time has come.
Yeah. He's just, you know, it's been a long time coming.
I bet that he's one of those guys that now has like, I probably shouldn't just be saying this about people, but I feel like you go search for Pauly Shore and it turns out he has a bunch of horrible political views and stuff.
Oh, I can't find out. I need to never find out.
You know, you don't want to destroy your pure memories of Pauly Shore.
Uh-huh. That's all the time we have for Topic Lords. Avery, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
Find me at Avery Burke Bandcamp. I think you search Avery Burke, you search Bandcamp, you'll get that one album. Pretty much every time I do this, somebody finds it. So that's nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And people have left really nice messages. And I am reading those messages, even though I don't respond to them, because I'm scared to respond to strangers.
Aww.
Or find me on LinkedIn, because I had to make a freaking LinkedIn account. That's it.
Sad.
Yeah. It was very sad.
And Chris, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at @MrChrisElHall. I don't really post anything there. I kind of want to get into the, like, how do you administer your own Mastodon server? So I don't know.
I mean,
it sounds like a fun computer-y thing to do.
Yeah, if you're the kind of person who likes running Linux.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I guess I'll find out.
Yeah, you got a bunch of free time now that you're not going to be employed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're traveling, so we probably won't.
Yeah, why go climb mountains when you could...
You could administer a Mastodon server, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Got to keep priorities straight.
You could be a sysadmin for that's like a modern BBS, right? Running your own. I have only the vaguest idea of how Mastodon works.
I mean, I think it kind of is, yeah. Like, it's a very similar, like, attempting to be a localized community.
Yeah, and you're running it and not getting paid anything, and people are probably yelling at you all the time.
Yep, yeah, yes. All these things are true. Thanks so much for being on.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, this is Jim. This is the audio I append to every episode of Topic Lords. Congratulations to our newly anointed lords. This episode was edited by Esper Quinn, who can also edit your episode if you contact them on Twitter. If you'd like more people to hear the show, you can tell your friends about it, or rate and review us on whatever podcast service you use. You can add content to the Topic Bucket by emailing topicbucket@topiclords.com, and you can contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/topiclords. Patrons get episodes a week early, and you get access to the Topic Lords Discord, where you can discuss topics with all the lords that hang out in there. See you next episode!